Welcome back to the Constitutional Clarion. This video is about the difficulty of managing freedom of speech, censorship, and internet takedown notices. Now, it's not an easy topic, and there are no simplistic solutions. When I was a child, my father was the general manager of a regional television station. It ran its own half-hour local news every evening, and my father had some rather strict rules about it. They included, when there was a local tragedy, not taking cameras to film mourners outside funerals or shoving cameras in their face and asking them how they felt. They also included not giving publicity to extortion acts such as needles in strawberries so as to prevent copycat acts. I don't remember any rules being about cocaine or using prostitutes to get interviews, because I'm pretty certain that this was completely outside my father's comprehension of what actually could happen. When I once mentioned my father's rules for his local news program to a lecturer at university, she said, "But that's censorship," and she was appalled. But I disagreed. I thought it was actually being civilized and being a good citizen in one's own local community. There are lots of things that shouldn't be shown on television or the internet, because we do live together in a society and we should treat other people with respect and not exploit their grief or glorify violence or tragedy. Real censorship, however, comes when the law prohibits us from communicating our thoughts and our ideas. In the past, it came from the banning and burning of books and restricting what could be published in newspapers. Sometimes censorship is essential to save lives, such as in war. Sometimes censorship is just silly. There was a great exhibition in the National Archives in Canberra a couple of years back about books that were banned entry to Australia. They even had a collection of these books that they put in the cafeteria, and you could dip into them while you were eating your lunch and read what was actually banned from entry into Australia in the 1950s because it was too salacious or racy. Mostly these were just poorly written pulp fiction. It was amusing in its awfulness, but it was also pretty embarrassing that we actually went to the effort of banning these books. They were hardly going to corrupt society. Sometimes censorship, however, is more concerning because its intent is to manipulate our political views. It bans us from expressing certain views or prohibits us from getting access to facts or information which could inform those views, such as information about government corruption or mismanagement. At one end of the spectrum, this kind of censorship, as often seen in communist countries, is oppressive and offensive. Freedom of speech is key to a flourishing democratic society. But at the other end of the spectrum, some kind of censorship may be necessary to support community harmony and to prevent the fueling of hatred and division between groups in the community. At the very least, however, we need to be open about what is being censored and why. Only then can people demand adjustments if the level of censorship is inappropriate, and also ensure the appropriate balance with freedom of speech. This is what has mostly concerned me about the controversy concerning the Australian eSafety Commissioner's takedown notices seeking the removal of material concerning the Wakely stabbing from social media sites belonging to Meta and X Corp, previously known as Twitter. There seems to be a discrepancy in the accounts of what is actually being required to be taken down from the internet. On the one hand, government sources and the eSafety Commissioner characterise the content as the actual video of the stabbing on the 15th of April. According to a press release, the removal notice identified certain specific URLs where this material, the filming of the stabbing, was located, and the takedown notice did not relate to commentary about the event. On the other hand, a statement by X said that it was ordered to remove posts that, quote, publicly commented, unquote, on the attack, and that these posts did not violate X's rules on violent speech. X also argues that the order is not within the scope of Australian law. The eSafety Commissioner has various powers under Australian law to order the removal of material. For example, in relation to the type of material that would be refused classification by the Classification Board. But this, of course, is subject to conditions and exemptions in the legislation. So what does the takedown notice in question actually require to be taken down from the internet? Not only does its legality turn on this, does it meet the requirements and the conditions in the legislation, but also our views may be different depending on what is required to be taken down. If it's only the actual video of what occurred, then not only would that likely meet the terms of the legislation, but most people would also regard that as perfectly reasonable. If it's posts commenting on what occurred, which do not themselves incite or promote violence, then that's another thing altogether. The debate would be different, especially as these matters could fall within the implied freedom of political communication within Australia. As a lawyer, the first thing that I did was to go looking for a copy of what the actual takedown notice said. So I went to the eSafety Commissioner's website, but I couldn't find it. If it is there somewhere online and I've just not found it, A, let me know, and B, my apologies, because I really did try. I even trawled through the eSafety Commissioner's FOI disclosure log, which, and this is just a side tip here to interested researchers, is often the best place to actually find genuine information about what a government agency does. It's where they publish the documents that have been released under FOI to other people who've requested them. And of course, government departments try to make it as hard as possible for you to actually find this. But here's my tip. If you put the words disclosure log into the query part on the website, you can usually find it. Anyway, looking in the disclosure log, in one of the documents there, which admittedly concerned other orders and notices given by the eSafety Commissioner, it said this. It said the eSafety Commissioner does not intend to publish the notices themselves, which will only be disclosed if required by law. Now, this is the point where I get worried, assuming that, of course, this applies to all its orders. There should be proper public accountability about the nature of what is censored. But I can also see there are difficulties here. When the order specifies the posts or the websites to be taken down, which contain abhorrent material, and to be clear here, the vast bulk of material ordered to be taken down by the eSafety Commissioner is abhorrent child sexual abuse material, then you do not want to advertise those posts or websites to people who are seeking this kind of offensive material. But there should be a middle way. There should be openly published orders which specify the nature of what is to be taken down, whether it's the video of a stabbing attack or whether it's comments about what happened or whether it's confined to comments that incite violence or whatever, without publicly advertising the URLs to people who might actually be attracted to try and find this kind of offensive material. Now, that would allow adequate accountability in relation to those orders, which is important in a society that values freedom of speech and in a society which also has a constitution which protects freedom of political communication. At the moment, the entire debate about Elon Musk and X and the takedown orders is an uninformed debate because we are not allowed to see what the orders, the takedown orders, actually say. And our legal system does not require sufficient openness about this in order to allow us to judge for ourselves. My second concern is about the extent of the orders beyond Australia's jurisdiction. Some time ago, when I was making a submission to the government's proposed legislation about misinformation and disinformation, which, by the way, there are a number of videos about this on this particular channel that flow from that submission. So when I was doing that, I was confounded about how the proposed scheme could possibly work in a global communications environment. How does our law control the operation of freedom of speech in America, for example, especially where you've got the First Amendment, constitutional freedom of speech and freedom of the press? So I spoke to some tech experts, clearly not being a tech expert myself, and I asked them whether this could work on the basis of X or Meta or whoever geo-blocking Australia so that posts in Australia that were regarded as misinformation and disinformation could be blocked here, but not necessarily elsewhere in the world. And I was assured that this was the case, so I abandoned the arguments and the concern about that. But now we see in relation to this, which is not misinformation and disinformation, this is a separate thing, abhorrent violence on the internet, but nonetheless, the same argument applies. We see the federal government complaining that it's not enough for X or Meta to geo-block these posts in Australia. And this is because some Australians will have a VPN which would allow them to see material on the internet based in other countries outside Australia. Now, this is a really serious issue because if we expect Australian law to bind Meta or X in terms of what it censors from the internet, and to do so all over the world, then it means that every other country can do the same. So do we expect that posts in Australia on X about the Ukraine war, for example, must be removed by X because a Russian law says that they're misinformation? Do we want China or any other country to impose takedown notices in relation to posts in Australia on political debates in Australia that they don't like and regard as misinformation? We might regard ourselves as the good guys, only requiring the removal of objectively abhorrent material from the internet. But if our laws can do this, so can any other country's laws, and the end of the journey here may well be external political interference in political debates in Australia. It's not hard to see how this would play out. Politicians should not be scoring points about seeking to remove one abhorrent video from internet access outside Australia without looking to the broader and much more frightening potential ramifications of their arguments. Have they really thought this through? Well, they should. And if you think that we wouldn't do this for anything other than a video showing a shocking crime, well, think again, because we already have. A previous order was issued by the eSafety Commissioner to remove a post on X in Canada by a Canadian man, which criticised the appointment by the World Health Organization of an Australian expert to advise on transgender issues. Now, I'm presuming here that the post was extremely offensive. I haven't seen it. I'm not judging it. But the point here is that it is an international political issue about who is appointed as an advisor to an international body, such as the WHO. In Australia, we have a constitutionally implied freedom of political communication. In Canada, there's a constitutionally entrenched Charter of Rights and Freedoms that protects freedom of expression, including freedom of the press and other media of communications. How is X supposed to accommodate conflicting laws from different countries about posts that have global visibility other than by geo-blocking them? These are not easy issues. Constitutional rights and freedoms, as well as laws from different countries, are all in play, not to mention complex international rules about conflicts of laws. Those politicians who think that this is a simple and clear-cut matter need to look beyond the political point scoring to the long-term ramifications of their actions and the genuine difficulty and complexity of managing global communications in the future. They also need to be more open about the orders that are made by the eSafety Commissioner so that we can have a genuine and informed debate about them, rather than the ill-informed debate that's currently going on. Thank you again for watching the Constitutional Clarion. I hope you found it interesting, and I look forward to seeing you next time. Goodbye.